Hi folks, welcome to the Money 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 podcast. I'm Surabhi Upadhyay and we come to you every week with some very interesting conversations to help you get your personal finances in order and get smart with your money.
What Budget 2020 has done is it has created lots of nuances, and a lot of the fine print has left people slightly confused as well, whether it's the manner in which now our mutual funds are going to be taxed. The tax is in the hands of the recipient. There are question marks around ULIPs, and then there is the biggest question of them all: to shift or not to shift. Yes, I'm talking about the new income tax regime that is on offer. Let's take the conversation forward. My guests on the show are Archit Gupta, founder and CEO of Clear Tax, and Rajiv Bajaj, chairman and MD of Bajaj Capital. Gentlemen, thank you so much for joining in. So we are still going through the exact impact, and I think the biggest headlines this year from Budget 2020 are in fact for the personal finance world. So I want to start by getting some initial thoughts, and you know, Rajiv, if you could open this out for us. The immediate knee-jerk reaction was a negative one, that, oh, the budget doesn't make me feel good, it doesn't make me feel any richer. But is that how you read it?
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree with you. This is, in terms of fine print, one of the more confusing budget. And you know, we are all, as humans, you know, subject to our mindsets. So I have grown up, when I was young, 25, 30 years old, I was grown up to that my first savings should go into investment, and I should open my SIP, and I should do my tax saving annually. And all of us, end of the year, we are in that season, February, March, we run to the accountants, you know, in our office and seek guidance. And suddenly, we have been given an option that you can give up all these deductions. You know, at this point, there are annually, as all the investors would know, you can invest around 3 lakhs of rupees and save around 93,000 tax. And what this budget has done, it has given you as an investor the choice whether you want to pay this tax, and particularly if you are in a tax slab of 5 lakhs to income slab of 5 to 15, you have money almost 5 to 10% of tax you're saving and money coming into your hands. So you now are your own boss. You have to decide. And FM has said it very clearly in her post-budget speech as well, that I am leaving this choice to you, and I'm progressively going to let you decide whether you want to save or you want to consume.
You know, which is why I can see Archit smiling away, because the fact that this choice is available to us has made chartered accountants, you know, in great demand. I'm sure all the lines at Clear Tax have been buzzing since the day of the budget. So, Archit, what's...
I believe so.
Absolutely. So, Archit, what's your first take?
Like, it's definitely more complex, and complexity, I feel, is not good. Like, while it is good for, like, as you called out, for Clear Tax and accountants, like, but overall for the taxpayer, this complexity is not good. Like, and as Rajiv commented, like, it's nicer for, like, the millennials. Like, we have data, like, about 45% millennials don't, like, fully invest on tax saving schemes. So it's actually like those 45% will immediately benefit from this this tax slab, which they may opt in for the no savings, no behavior around shape, being shaped around tax savings, around investing, and so on and so forth. But to me, like, in our team, like, there's a very deep split between like two camps. One is like, this is important, like the tax saving behaviors and the first investing behaviors, which were introduced to a person because of taxes, was very, very important. And like the other part is like, no, we should give more power and more control to the taxpayer, and it's their choice. So deep split within, but like as much of the panel called out, like above 15 lakh rupees, like definitely the older scheme is better. So I think not much gained, complexity added. I think it has been done for like maybe a 2-year roadmap, over which like the government may want to do away with all kind of complexity on the tax code and just be like, hey, this is where we want you to go to. I think like I think the other part, like, which I find interesting, is like no new addition on like on like say national pension scheme or like other schemes which were like maybe more oriented towards savings and pension and old age. Like I think they have to encourage savings at some point, I feel.
No, I take your point, and I think that's where the disappointment really came from as well, because there was no incentive to invest more. I mean, and no direct incentive to spend more also. It's not like, you know, my take home salary is going to look fatter because of less tax, right? So Archit, the math first. I heard a general rule of thumb which was telling me that if your total deductions, your ATC, HRA, medical insurance, if the value of the total deductions, including home loan, is exceeding 2.5 lakh rupees, then you should not even bother looking at the new regime. This is a rule of thumb that I heard from some tax experts after the speech. Would you concur with that? And what is the bracket in which there is a saving? I mean, even if there were to be the saving, what's that specific bracket?
Right. So, so great question, actually. So, simplifying this further, like if you're above rupees 15 lakh, actually there may not be much in the new regime for you to even look at. Between 5 to 7.5 lakh rupees of annual income, you have to really evaluate between the two options. And there are very confusing and micro scenarios in which one regime is better than the other one. So I think the rule of thumb which you just talked about, the 2.5 lakh rupees if you have as deductions and savings, that's a no-brainer. So you should absolutely take the old regime. And I think it's basically slightly above 5 lakh to 7 lakhs, I think it makes sense to be in the new regime. Otherwise, it's a toss-up till about 10, 11 lakh. I think it gets as, even if you have deductions as much as 1,50,000 rupees, it gets interesting to evaluate the old regime. So it is confusing.
So basically,
easy rule of thumbs in my mind, but...
Yeah. So basically, I get your point. You're saying that if you're in the, 5 lakhs to maybe 7.5 lakhs bracket, then you could consider the new regime. But that also, if you're not taking the advantage of any deductions. And, that's the other point. And, Rajiv, let me come back to you on this, because a millennial doesn't stay a millennial forever, right? And I don't know if yearly switches between these schemes are possible. So what would your advice be to millennials? It might be very lucrative today because, I don't have a home loan. I don't have, savings. And let me just opt for the new tax regime. What happens tomorrow, day after, when you start hopefully earning more?
Yeah, I mean, let's look at, a personality. Let's look at somebody in Bangalore or Chennai in an IT hub or in Gurgaon. And these people, these days, they don't buy cars. They travel around in Uber. They don't like to buy houses. They love to live on rent. So people like to be asset light. They are running asset light businesses. They're young entrepreneurs, self-employed. They're working for, the new generation companies. And just imagine a 30-year-old who's earning 10 lakh of rupees. They suddenly have this prospect of having additional 50,000 to a lakh in their hand, and that is empowering. I mean, if you do a simple calculation, as what you just said, if you are in this slab, as Archit also said, it is clearly more sensible for you to opt for the new regime. But if you think deeper, what is the DNA of India as a society? And let's we are a saving oriented society. We've saved about 25-35% of our income annually. That's in our DNA, and we have to plan for the future. So what is the behavior you want to seed as a regime, as a government? And this government has always been known for long term sort of policies.
Sure.
So I'm a little surprised by this. And post demonetization, particularly, we have seen a huge financialization of savings and money moving in from real estate, physical assets to financial assets. And even if you see the global benchmarks, even in Western countries, which are more consumption oriented, there are sections like ISAs and 401ks. So I would say people now need to, we are in an empowered information age. People are more self-aware, they take care of their own health.
Right.
And I guess they now need to take care of their own financial health with no government incentives.
Before I even get to mutual funds, I want to talk about NPS, because that instrument started becoming very popular when it came to retirement savings. Now, Archit, explain to us what has happened. It seems that there is a cap of 7.5 lakhs on an additional voluntary deduction that one was making. Now, is this a cap, on my deduction as the employee, or is it a cap on the employer's contribution? What is this 7.5 lakh rupee cap?
Right. So this Surbhi, is a cap on the employer's contribution to your like savings on NPS, EPF, etc. So this is done really for like capping out for high earners in India. And like I think like when you look at like when you step back and look, like the government is basically signaling that assuring returns of like 8-9% annually is something that they're not able to do. So overall, like this is a cap towards the employer, but definitely has impact towards long-term savings. And the other part is like on national pension scheme, like the 50,000 deduction cap, like for your own contribution remains. And that I was hoping to see like should have been raised up to 1 lakh or 2 lakh rupees, which like Rajiv also mentioned, like 401k policy or something, like which is like okay, savings up to when you're 65 years of age, like that should have been like really 2 lakh, 3 lakh rupees, where you really get some leeway when this was taken out. Yeah.
So just to understand this further, up till now, NPS was voluntary. Even if my employer was making an additional contribution to the NPS, how did the deduction work so far? How was my taxable income coming down? If you could explain the mechanics and how this new cap is going to play out now, because I'm sure a lot of people are still confused.
Yeah, absolutely. So basically in the section 80CCD2, which was like the employer could contribute up to 10% of your salary for like your national pension scheme or employer PF or superannuation fund and some of those aspects. So up to 10% of your income could have been like tax-free and like could have gone into your pension. And so now that amount has a total cap of rupees 7.5 lakh above and beyond the 10% cap. So this is really applicable to folks who are earning, let's assume, more than 75 lakh rupees of salary annually or something around that ballpark. Essentially what this means for like most normal earners, that there'll be no impact. This will be for high earners, like but like still a pretty significant like change from a policy perspective, and it is signaling where India is headed towards. Right, like so next year this may come down and so on and so forth. So I keep thinking about like what will happen one year or 2 years down the line. And so I think it's pointing towards like how savings will like go towards.
Got it. So basically, high income earners, watch out, because the government's really coming after you. As Archit points out, if you were earning more than 75 lakhs, then this cap of 7.5 lakhs is going to hit, because you can't ask your employer to change your salary structure, give you a higher basic proportion and put more money in the NPS, which was working very well for a lot of people who were earning high salary. Speaking of high salary earners or high income earners, Rajiv, now let's talk about mutual funds, because the feedback that I've got in general is that on equity funds, at least, the hit again is going to come for people who are in the highest tax slabs. So what did you make of this whole change in taxation where dividends are now becoming taxed in the hands of the recipient?
Yeah, I mean, this is this has come as a bit of a surprise, and I would not be surprised if this proposal is reviewed by the government, because there are going to be a lot of representations from industry associations. We are going to do that, because essentially the intent, as we know, for the longest time, investments in equity mutual funds has been tax-free, and it's only in the last couple of years capital gains has been introduced on that. And people are now used to that regime of paying around 10% tax on equity mutual fund investment. So if you make dividends taxable at the marginal rate, and if you're in the 30% slab, that is too hard a slab for an investor. And it is almost, illogical. It's hard to understand why it has been done. And possibly, even at the government, budgets are put together very fast, and this point hasn't been, the implications, cascading implications haven't been thought through. I'm sure this will be re-looked at. But in the meantime, for investors, my advice to you would be to look at the growth options and avail the capital gains regime, because that is the simplest way to go around this, if this were to remain.
Okay, well, they asked for a review on the high surcharge as well. That wasn't rolled back last year. So I don't know. Let's see if there is a change in dividends and if that can really happen. And that brings me to the wider debate on whether ULIPs are now really becoming more tax efficient, Rajiv, because that's something that a lot of people will consider. insurance companies are selling ULIPs very aggressively. They are saying, look, we've reduced our charges, now our commissions are lower. But is that really true? Do ULIPs make a compelling case now?
Yeah, you see, in a Bollywood sense, kya kehte hain ki, you know, badnaam ka bhi naam hota hai. So, insurance per se, the way you know insurance is sold in India, it is a kind of a hard sell, and in, you know, insurance has kind of a bad name. And even on our TV shows, debates, in our community, we look at insurance as something which is not right for the investor. But ULIPs, if you study the ULIPs and you know the changes IRDA has made in terms of pricing of ULIPs and the structure of schemes, ULIPs have become very attractive over the last few years. And in terms of cost implications, we've done that internally several times. If you are investing in ULIPs for more than 10-year horizon, then ULIPs are possibly as attractive or even more attractive than equity mutual funds in terms of costing, because the fund management fee in ULIPs is lower, and your upfront costs are evened out over a 10-year period, and hence from that point of view, and then the current budget point of view, if you see the benefits of Section 1010D, ULIPs are a very healthy, attractive option for an investor, particularly those up to 50 years of age. So if you are older than that, then then the insurance part may or may not make that much sense to you. Do consider ULIP if you're a long-term investor.
Archit, now this NRI taxation was a big headline of the budget. Then there was a clarificatory note that was released as well. So just explain this. We're not, trying to talk about people who perhaps were trying to use the window or the loophole. But even genuine workers who are working in whatever jurisdiction, whether it's Dubai or, any other tax-friendly jurisdiction, will they also be impacted? How will the new rule work?
Right. So I think even after the clarification, I think there's a lot more questions which remain unanswered. So I think we'll see a bunch more clarifications come out over the next couple of days or over the week or so, because frankly, I think this has raised more questions than answers. So that's part number one. Part number two is I think the intent here is that the double taxation avoidance agreements, right, DTAA, whatever areas they were covering, this is trying to cover the area where you are not falling into some jurisdiction because of the travel that you may be doing between countries, and you're not proving out to be resident anywhere. So it's trying to put you under a tax regime when there was no, they can't figure out jurisprudence. So I think still a lot of clarity awaited. I think still not very clear.
Okay.
I would say that.
Okay, fair enough. Rajiv, so coming down to last thoughts then, sum it all up for us. As we start looking at the next year, this one's winding up, what is the advice that you'd like to give people? Because we're going through some of these confusing questions, trying to make sense of it. But next financial year, looking at our tax, our investments, our savings, how to even begin?
The advice I would guess is very, very simple and straightforward. You are now empowered. You are the master of your own destiny. And you have to think today versus the future. While your today needs to be comfortable as an investor, and you have that temptation to consume that much more, go to that extra few restaurants or go to those shops and buy those nice clothes, or you can save up for your future. And the answer is in being in balance. You have to make most of your today as well as do your financial planning for the future. We have some beautiful taxation, tax saving schemes. And we have excellent investment avenues in mutual funds, in ULIPs, in NPS and EPFs. And you must have all these, in your portfolio. And this is saving up for your future.
Okay, well, those are wise words and words that we must keep in mind. On that note, just a last quick clarification. Giving choice is great, Archit, but is this choice flexible? I think there was some confusion. Can I keep switching back and forth? So as my income level increases, can I opt back to the old regime if it still exists? Is the law clear on that?
No, so this is an area of huge debate and discussion within our own company and outside because we obviously help 25,000 chartered accountant firms with our software, and obviously millions of taxpayers use our software. So actually, whether you have to opt in at the time of like April 1 to your employer, or you can do it at the time of tax filing. So right now, common wisdom which is prevailing is it's like at the time of tax filing, you can opt in basis what you did in the year. So you can like look back on like what you did from April 1 to March 31st, and when July comes, you can take a decision like what is better for you. But this is causing all sorts of confusion, because on April 15th, when your employer asks you, what are you going to do? Like, and which tax regime do we give you a TDS on? Like, that's like super confusing. So this is a really good question. So I think like we are also awaiting clarification. Mostly it is converging towards like what you do between April 1st and March 31st.
Okay.
You can decide like what is suitable for you on like on July. But like it'll cause like a enough amount of grief on tax deducted at source TDS.
No, I think it'll be important to get clarity at the start of the year as well, because otherwise I need to know if I'm going to spend more, invest more, what do I do, will have to arise from the fact that I need to understand the law. But I take your point. I think we do need more clarity. Gentlemen, thank you very much for being with us and making sense of everything that we know, at least today. Thank you for joining in.
That's it on this week's podcast. You can catch the show at 6:30 p.m. on Tuesdays with repeats on Saturday and Sunday mornings only on CNBC TV 18. You can also find us on the CNBC TV 18 YouTube channel. Do send your feedback, comments, queries. Catch me on Twitter. My handle is at Surabhi Upadhyay. That's SurabhiUpadhyay. Don't forget to add the hashtag money. Catch you next week.